Now, it has been said, and sadly I've never found any convincing evidence to refute it, that one day we will all die. A question increasingly being asked is whether our digital selves die with us. It might sound a little odd, but there is a real-world argument out there as to whether all the material that represents us in the digital space remains our property, or is someone else's property, or is even still us, in the way that our bodies, in a sense, remain us, even when we no longer breathe within them. And if it is our property, do we get to choose who we leave it to, and who is not allowed to see it? Increasingly, courts are being asked to judge on the status of the digital rights of people who have died or become permanently incapacitated. The New South Wales government is just one of many around the world trying to examine what laws might have to be enacted to make this easier to navigate and to understand. Well, today, two people have been looking at just these issues, Australian philosopher Patrick Stokes from Deakin University and British academic lawyer Dr. Adina Habinya from the University of Hertfordshire, who has written a submission to the New South Wales Law Reform Commission inquiry into access to digital assets upon death or incapacity. Hello to you both. Hello. Now, these are plainly philosophical questions almost as much as they are legal ones. So if I could start with you, Patrick Stokes. What is the philosophical status of our digital selves when we have died?
Well, no one's quite sure, actually, on the answer to that. That's still something that we're only just, I think, really starting to grapple with. And in fact, philosophers, I think, have been a bit late to this particular party. We haven't been thinking about this a great deal. But we're starting to think more and more about the way in which we are partly constituted by certain forms of information about ourselves. Not all information. So, for instance, something like your credit card number is just a random number, and it doesn't really have much to do with your identity in the way that, say, your name does, or where you were born, or who your parents were. Some bits of information are closer to our identity and more constitutive of who we are. So social media, for instance, is one of the main ways in which we're present in other people's lives now. And so what I'm interested in is the way in which we then need to grapple with what the status is of all the stuff we leave behind online after we die. What do we do with these things? Do we have an automatic right to delete them, or do they have some sort of automatic right to be preserved, and who gets to make that sort of decision?
And these presumably are the very questions, Dr. Adina Habinya, that lawyers are grappling with at the moment. Are you coming to any sorts of clarity on it?
Yes, the lawyers are grappling with similar questions, trying to answer in our typical ways. Do we need more laws, less laws? Do we need clarity here? And of course we do. So around the world, this question has attracted attention in the last few years, mostly. And America and Canada, for example, have tried to solve the problem. France now.
Are there any test cases, Adina, that have come to the fore that really show into relief some of these issues?
The most recent one is from Germany. And the Supreme Court in Germany decided that parents could have the access to their late daughter's Facebook account because they're so-called universal successors. So they should step into the shoes of the girl and inherit that contract and Facebook account as well, which is a decision where I really disagree with, and I can go into details.
Now, that's interesting, because I would have thought this girl was only 15 years old. And a lower court said that the parents would not have access to her Facebook details. It was the higher court that overturned that. But it would seem to me that if you're the parents of a 15-year-old girl, there was some suggestion that she might have taken her own life, that to be able to look into her Facebook history would be almost a right that most parents would think they might have. Why isn't it?
It's not as simple, I would say. So, for example, for the purpose of criminal proceedings, of course, Facebook would disclose this information with a court order or any document, similar document. However, questions here were not just about the evidence. It was about the access, the nature of the contract with Facebook, whether it's purely personal, and I would agree it is, and the court disagreed, whether this is property that can be inherited, or is there an inherent right to privacy that extends on death. So the court really tried to get into all these questions, and I think unsuccessfully. So it wasn't just about the question of suicide and evidence, which is quite clear-cut, and I would agree with you, yes.
And one of the areas of that which came up was that the lower court felt as if the girl's contacts, her Facebook friends, in a sense, had an entitlement to privacy and deserved to be protected in that way from the prying eyes, I suppose, of the parents.
Yes, indeed. So that's another question. So there is this notion of postmortem privacy of the actual user, but also there is a relational privacy and privacy of the other individuals, such as friends. So yes, many, many difficult questions there, and private communication in particular, in my view, should be treated with sensitivity.
So, Patrick, there's a legal issue there. Put us through the philosophical issue there. Where do you see the moral weight falling in terms of privacy in death compared with, you know, the rights of family members to get access to your life on social media?
It's actually very strange that we often seem to work with the assumption that the dead just have no privacy rights. Given that so much of our other ethical approach to the dead is actually built around the idea that they do have interests, and those interests can be frustrated. So we keep promises that we make to the dead, for instance. We assume that we're still bound by those promises. We do things like honouring the dead, not speaking ill of the dead. If somebody's been wrongly convicted many years ago and died, we think that we're doing something good for them if we go and, you know, restore their reputation or get the conviction quashed or whatever. But it's interesting that when it comes to privacy, we don't seem to assume that that holds. And I think there is something wrong with that. If the privacy rights are there for the person, and if we take it that we do have rights to the dead, then there's some prima facie grounds on which to think that privacy rights continue post-mortem.
I just wonder, you know, as an utter layman, if we're not overthinking this, in days gone by, when someone died, they very often left, you know, a pile of photo albums, which would have shown them in all their holidays ever since when they were children or whatever. And the children of that now deceased person would just assume that as part of just the sort of the flotsam and jetsam that goes with the life. And no one would ever have argued that you weren't entitled to look into that photo album or anything. So how is it different?
Well, again, it depends on what sort of objects we're talking about. Something like a photo album, yeah, again, you can sort of assume that because it's a physical thing, anyone who's left it behind is going to assume that it's going to be visible to someone one day. With, say, your email account or private messages you've sent to someone, those are sent with a kind of expectation of privacy. So you don't necessarily assume, and maybe this is just because most people don't think about this, but you don't necessarily assume that they're all going to be visible to someone one day. So again, it does potentially come down to what sort of object we're talking about. The other thing that I think we can fall into, though, is thinking that the fact that it's a digital object makes some sort of categorical difference when it's not always clear that it does necessarily.
So, Adina, if they've got something like text messages and email messages, are there different levels of right to that, ranging from no one has a right because it's a private matter for the original author now dead, or alternatively that perhaps next of kin can have it, but perhaps not children or children? But, you know, how do you sort all that mess out?
The objects and the online representation of the self and identity is much more complex than one's letters and one's pictures. And Berlin Court made a mistake here, as well as I argued somewhat, that letters are the same as social network accounts, and I would disagree. So, for example, in terms of the content, it's not only personal data there or privacy that is involved, as you rightly identified, but also there is a question of copyright, for example. So if you wrote poems on Facebook or stored a book in Google, say Gmail, or something that it could be protected by copyright, yes, next of kin and heirs could inherit that copyright and they would have the access. However, that access would not mean that they would have the access to the private communication and the account itself. So there are the nuances that we need to look at in law and clarify. And I think, yeah, regulation, as the New South Wales Commission's efforts, are welcome here.
Now, I mean, I can imagine that there'll be very few people under the age of 30, certainly in the Western world, who don't have a social media account. And many kids now grow up right from the start with having pictures of their play and so on out there on Facebook, proud parents, whatever. Now, among those will be the future Beyoncés or the superstars of the world. And if just at the point that they're becoming famous, they die, those titbits, if you like, out of someone's past history might have an enormous economic value. Does that tilt the conversation about who has a right to the stuff that you have put up on social media?
Yes, it does, actually. And depending on, again, a country and a jurisdiction, there are personality rights that can be inherited in America their economical rights, and they can extend for example, 100 years post-mortem, but that's not everywhere in the world. And yes, the solutions should not be one size fits all. And in this case, because of the economical and lucrative nature of the account, yes, there will be interest that could be passed on to heirs. However, for a majority of population, this wouldn't be the case. So we can't use the same solution. And in law, we do have instruments that could sort this out.
Do you think, Patrick Stokes, that people's digital personalities need to be somehow included in wills?
Yeah, that's often a very good thing to do, I think, is to sort of make it clear what you want done. But most people don't necessarily think about that. So certainly that would be a good thing to do. We then need to get the law to sort of make sure that those wishes are actually going to be carried out and aren't overridden by other things necessarily. But we also then, I think, need to think as well about what the responsibilities as well as the rights of the survivors are in these cases as to what they can and can't do with these materials. What sort of reuses of your online materials are going to be acceptable too? And as we get better at things like AI chatbots, for instance, which can take some of your online traces and use them to speak online in ways that sound like you or that replicate your online presence, I think we then need to be thinking really, really hard about what the legitimate uses of the materials the dead leave behind are.
Another example of how the digital world has changed the world absolutely in ways that we could never have imagined. Much more to talk about in this, but you've certainly given us a taster of those issues. Patrick Stokes from Deakin University, Senior Lecturer in Philosophy, and Dr. Adina Habinya, Senior Law Lecturer at the University of Hertfordshire in England. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.